Hello, and welcome to the Transpose Podcast. I'm Robin Allura. With me today is Stephanie Breed, and we are certainly glad to have you. If this is your first time listening, we sincerely hope you enjoy the program. If you've listened before, let us thank you for coming back to another episode.
Hi, okay. Yeah, sounds good. What are we talking about today, Robin?
Well, today, all right, sorry everybody, watched a little too much Bob Ross. Today, we are going to be discussing gender identity in relation to sexuality. We will also be talking about some double standards that are imposed on the LGBT community. Hopefully today we'll get to a little bit about makeup and some cosmetics. This week's top five is our top five music genres that usually dominate our playlists. But before we get into all of that, Miss Stephanie, I believe you have a bit of big and exciting news.
Yes, so I'm going to start off the show by first of all thanking everyone who has come back. And if you've been following the show, you know that we've had some transition-related goals. And I met one of my goals this week. The state of Texas gave me my paperwork that is now, I am now officially, legally, Stephanie Bree Todd.
Yay!
Female.
And we need to be clear, too, that this isn't just a legal name change. But what's really important, too, is also your gender marker, right?
Yes, everything has changed. Now there's a lot of stuff to get into that'll, you know, take time, you know, social security card and bank statements, all that stuff, but for now I'm just like floating in the clouds. I literally, no joke, when I got the news, I came home, cranked up my favorite dance playlist, and I just drank wine and danced for 3 hours.
That's awesome.
It was so exciting.
I'm so happy for you, Stephanie.
Yes.
It is a major step.
It is, and I'm so happy. It's been like, 38 years I've been like letting people call me that cringy name, and it's finally like, you can't do that anymore. State of Texas says it's illegal.
It's
and
totally
you can't fuck with
now.
Texas. They're a gun-toting state.
Yeah, that's great. And I will say we are going to kind of get into how that all takes place in later episodes. But
yes.
Stephanie, congratulations. That
Thank
is
you.
Just huge.
Thank you. It is very awesome. I'm just so happy. And it definitely, it's like just a big old sigh of relief. And personal sidebar, y'all. My mom called me Stephanie the first time this week. She's been struggling with that, but now that it's, you know, I mean, she's been struggling because my parents are very conservative, but she's making an effort. So I got to give her credit for that.
And that's awesome. That's all you can ever ask for is if you have conservative family members or anything like that, that's all you can ask is that they at least try. You know, that, and that's a huge step for them. So again, so happy for you, Stephanie. So very happy.
Yes.
Now that we're on a very light and fun note, let's drop the whole tone of the show and get into some heavy stuff, shall we?
Sure, I'm ready.
All right, so we're the first major topic for today. It's going to be gender identity and its relation to sexuality. Now, this is a very heavy and confusing topic for a lot of people. I believe most people think that these two things are tied together in an inseparable bond, but that's not really true.
Not even a little bit, if you want the truth.
Right. Not
there,
even,
there's
I mean,
some
not really.
Intersection, but it's a lot of those intersections are societally imposed.
Yeah. They are definitely, most of this is like imposed by society. But as we learn things about, gender identities and gender and sexuality, we're seeing that those social restrictions, they're just, you know, we use the term here a lot, outdated.
Well, it's like, you know, like especially with every cross-dresser, every trans girl goes through that cross-dresser phase where people will, there's about two or three verses in the good old book that they like to quote that are that will shame you. But the thing is, like, the people that was written to, men wore dresses. So how can you say men are not supposed to wear dresses when they were shamed for not wearing dresses? So I don't know. It's kind of confusing. But we don't want to get too into that. But I do want to say that, yeah, that, like, in Scotland, men wear kilts. Those are skirts.
Yeah, yeah. It's I don't think that it's, I think that's more our country's culture, I think, that,
yes,
because, you know, and that's what puts that on us.
For our foreign listeners, we are Texans Americans, so, you know, we're gonna wave the motherfucking flag and shoot out the fireworks because we are, you know, we're open to the rest of the world, but, you know, we're Americans. We are the stereotypical Americans, only not the belligerent asshole ones.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it depends on who you ask. Apparently, I can be a belligerent asshole.
There you go.
anyway, we're digressing. Anyway, to me, this topic, and this is probably making it a little more simple than it really is, but this is just a starting point for everybody to kind of understand. To me, gender identity is how you feel, how you see yourself, and sexuality is basically what and who you're attracted to.
And there's not only overlap between, you know, sexuality and romantic attraction. Those can all, like we talked about a little bit last week, with our very different top five, you know, lists. Some of your, you can be romantically attracted to somebody, but not sexually attracted at all. And I know a lot of cisgendered women who will tell you that, you know, they'll fall for a guy, but they're like, yeah, but he's just not, you know, don't get the motor going. So.
God, that's a phrase I use all the time, get my motor going.
So, you know, I want to pull out, there's like two or three layers to this that we are going to elaborate more deeply in future episodes. This is just kind of like our experiences, me and Robin's experiences, our understanding as of this moment in time, and what we want to convey.
Right. So, the first part of this, the gender identity, let's just kind of separate the two and talk about the two, gender identity and sexuality, kind of separated.
Yes.
So, like, gender identity, as I said, is how you see yourself or how you feel. To me, this is something our allies and our supporters try to understand. They can't really wrap their mind around it because they don't feel the exact same way. They don't feel that, hey, I'm in the wrong body.
Right.
That happens. It's gender identity is kind of the notion that you feel when you look in the mirror and what you see staring back at you doesn't feel right. And I don't mean, okay, I've got 50 extra pounds, right? I mean, you just look at it and you just go, this isn't right. And I do want to say that, you know, while this is that particular thing is primarily a trans community thing, it does also dip into and involve like non-binary and gender fluid groups, which I'll be the first one to admit, I don't quite understand non-binary, but that's me, and I'm trying to figure that all out.
I wrote down my list of the genders as I understand them, and I can give a top level brief summary of each one. Cis, CIS, which I believe is short for comfortable in your own skin, if I'm not mistaken. It may be a Latin suffix. I don't give a shit. I'm just calling it CIS because that's what we use. Those are people that are born with, you know, males that are born with male genitals who identify as male, and they may be hetero, they may be homosexual. They're not, that's where we were kind of going with the whole, they're not necessarily interconnected. You know, you can be cisgendered and homosexual. But I also wrote down transgender, that's what Robin and I are. I wrote down gender fluid, which is, that one's tricky to define. And then I also wrote down non-binary, which is similar but not the same as gender fluid. And I wrote down gender queer, who I only know one person who identifies as gender queer, and I still have trouble wrapping my head around that one, to be honest. And then I put a star next to intersex and unix, because those two are like, yeah, they're in the family, but they're not. That's more an anatomy than actual gender identity. But they have fluid gender identities themselves. You know, you can't just say because someone's a eunuch, they're a heterosexual male who has non-functioning genitals. That might not be the case. You know.
Right.
And then on the sexuality side, you know, briefly we have heterosexual, which we know that as. You're attracted to the opposite of what you are. Homosexual, which is where you're attracted to what you are, basically, or how you identify. Bisexual and pansexual. And asexual is pretty easy. That's someone who has no sexual feelings at all. It's easy to understand the definition. I don't think it's easy for most people to understand the concept, because most people have a level of sexual attraction. And then bi and pan are not...
I don't think so either. I think that is... that's. It's one of those that everybody... can go, they'll use the phrase, okay, I get that, but in honest, no, you don't.
And I can honestly say I've never met anyone who identifies as asexual, but I know some people who aren't motivated by sex, myself included. Sex is just like, it's, no, I'm not going to say, you know, if I get the opportunity to have some fun, maybe, but I'm a Catholic, so my opportunities are kind of narrowly defined.
As opposed to me, who's just fueled by that.
Yes. But on the difference, like bi, and we'll make this a full topic another day, because I really think we can dive into it. But here's my understanding of bi versus pan. And I'm just going to give a brief understanding, because I know Robin and I have both indicated that we are somewhat bisexual, but bisexual... Okay, but bisexual does not mean... And it goes back to the suffix bi, B-I, meaning two. It doesn't mean that you're attracted to both. I'm going to be a little crass here. It doesn't mean that you're attracted to both vaginas and dicks. It means you're attracted to two different sexualities. In most cases, it is, you know, you're attracted to both anatomies. But it can also be, you can be a trans woman or a trans man, and if you're attracted to other trans women and hetero women, you're still technically bisexual, because some of those trans women are going to have, they're going to have dicks. Let's just be real. But then there's also homosexual guys, you know, like myself, I can say this, I'm attracted to femininity. So I am very sexually attracted to trans or cisgendered females, but not lesbians. I'm not necessarily attracted to lesbians. That's a separate sexuality. I consider myself a lesbian in the sense that I'm attracted to women, and I consider myself a woman. Pansexual is basically there's no limits. So for me, bisexual is two, at least two. That's why we get the bi. Pansexual is basically, you know, like if I met a trans woman who had a penis, to me she's still a woman with an oversized clitoris. But if I'm at a gay man in a dress, that's a gay man in a dress with a dick. I know that's hard to separate in your mind, but it's subtle. But it's the same way with a gay guy might not be attracted to a trans woman, because he might think the trans woman's too feminine for him. But he might be attracted to a homosexual gay man who sometimes dresses like a girl. He might be into effeminate men. And the best way I really can think of to explain that, at least from me, in my understanding, is, so let's say you have, and I'm gonna kind of wrap this up and kind of pull back a little bit, but you have, damn it, my nose is runny. So you have men and women, right? You have lesbians and you have I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought. Robin, you have to pick it up for here. My nose is running. I gotta blow my nose and then I'll let you talk and then I'll get my thought back.
Okay, yeah, you know, there's a lot of layers to that one, girl. You know, so, I'm kind of going back to the whole non-binary, and even we're going to touch a little bit on that pansexual thing, you know, like Stephanie was saying, you know, her attractions are based on other feelings, where, you know, if you ask people who know me, or you ask even ask AJ, and they say, well, what is Robin attracted to, AJ might look at you and go, a pulse.
Yes. And what I was trying to get at is, I wanted to throw this out there, there are cisgendered hetero, and we're going to use the cisgendered heterosexual men. This is your stereotypical male who's attracted to women. Okay, but those dudes, there are a subset of those dudes that have an attraction to us, to trans women. They call us trannies in the porn community. You're bisexual, whether you'll admit it or not, because those girls don't have what the other girls have. I'm fine with, look, I told my friend this, I am perfectly comfortable with cock. I just don't like the dicks they're attached to. But I don't know if I would be into a gay man in a dress, because he might be a little too, you know, I like the feminine, I like soft and squishy like other women. I don't want rock hard. That's just like you.
Now we're getting into some deep waters, Stephanie, and don't say that for this. So, yeah, I mean, I get that, you know, to me, how gender identity and how it relates to the sexuality, there, as Stephanie said, there's a lot of places where it intersects, but it can totally be different. I know that my sexuality isn't just tied to my gender. Just because now I'm transitioning and I consider myself a woman, that doesn't mean that I'm going to pack up, leave AJ, and only date guys. That's just not going to happen. That's not, they're not tied together. You know, I think my sexuality is definitely very fluid. You know, and who knows? I mean, just Stephanie kind of giving us those definitions and brief overviews of some of those. You know what? Maybe I need to get out of the old way of thinking, because I do believe that, you know, maybe bisexuality is something that might be a little outdated. I don't know. You know, that's something.
And just like I do... I do like to point this out, because there are TERFs out there who use this against us. And I'm going to say there are people out there who want to attack trans women because they say that it is harmful to lesbian identity. And it goes the same way with guys, you know, homosexual guys, you know. Bisexual is a thing. We don't want to sound it like, you know, we're trying to say bisexual. It's just like gay is a thing. But trans people don't have to be bi or gay. You can be straight. You can be a straight heterosexual trans man or a trans woman, and you can be completely straight, as in, you know, you're a woman but you only like straight men. You don't have to be attracted to gay guys if you're a trans woman. There are a lot of trans women who won't date or are not attracted to other trans women for one reason or another, and that's their sexuality. Me, I'm very okay with trans women. In fact, I would probably be more, and I think if a trans woman and a trans woman were in a relationship, I think that would be classified as a homosexual relationship if you're both the same. My understanding of the definition of homosexual. But I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, that's where things start getting super confusing.
Yeah.
And
And I'm fine with confusing.
I think everybody needs to understand is this isn't something that we're just trying to put out there for our allies to try to wrap their head around how crazy the LGBTQ community is. It's even we are wrapping our minds around it.
Yeah, and they call our journey. It's everybody in the LGBT community refers to it as a journey of discovery. You're figuring things out. Some people figure out early on they are binary heteronormative. They figure that out in first grade. Some of us figure out we're not that, and then it takes us a little while longer to lock down what we are.
Yeah, it definitely does. You know,
I mean, I was in first grade. I'm gonna tell a quick story, 2 minutes tops. When I was in first grade, I had a crush on a girl named Rachel, and she was a really cute girl, red hair, curly freckles. But I also had a crush on a boy named Marvin. Now, I know I said that my most recent boy crush was my first boy crush, but this was first grade, so those kind of crushes in first grade are different. Because only reason why I liked him is because he played with GoBots instead of Transformers.
Standards, girl, standards.
There you go. I was poor. I had GoBots. Kids who had Transformers, they were rich kids. That's why I became obsessed with Transformers, because I was like, are you fucking kidding me? These things exist? But anyways, I knew then, I was like, how can I like a boy and a girl? And how can I think of myself as a girl when I don't have the thing that girls have? I didn't even know what girls had. I just knew that I didn't have the thing because, you know, I knew I was treated differently from my sisters. So there's so much that goes into trying to figure it out, you know. Now, we didn't even get into... I have a friend who classifies themselves as... This is funny. I can't wrap my head around this, but he's a cisgendered, bisexual, aromantic individual. And I was like, dude, that's too many adjectives.
So I'm going to ask this question about that. What the hell does that even mean?
It means that he has no romance. It means he's a dude that just wants to fuck, but he's okay with fucking others. He doesn't want romance. I could be wrong.
Not marriage material.
There you go. I could be wrong in my interpretation of that, but that's, I was like, well, if asexual means you have no sexual attraction, doesn't aromantic mean you have no romantic attraction? I can't wrap my head around that.
Emotionless robot to me.
Yeah. That's your stereotypical jock. That's just like a walking dick.
Yeah.
There you go.
Wow, my mind is blown, and that's hard to do.
Guys, if you don't want women to call you pigs, just say, hey, bitch, I'm aromantic. I don't know if that's true or not, but there you go.
I don't think that's a good thing. I think we need to put in a disclaimer. Please do not walk up to Stephanie and go, bitch, I'm aromantic.
Right.
Oh, dear God, there's something wrong with us.
No, there's not. We're perfectly normal within the context of we are us.
That's true. That's, you know, yeah. So, I mean, you know, back to how these two things are tied together. I mean, you know, I love and adore AJ. I mean, I worship the ground she walks on. Anybody who knows the two of us can, they see it and they know it. But my attraction to her sexually isn't necessarily tied to my gender identity. I mean, I felt that way before. Before I went ahead and said, you know what? I don't feel right. But even as I'm transitioning, I don't feel any different about how I'm attracted to her. So yeah, to me, that means clearly that these things aren't exclusively tied together. I mean, come on, look at our top five from the last episode.
And like a lot of people our age,
tied together for me, come right? On, you know,
and a lot of people our age will tell you things can change. You know, I've heard it said that your sexuality is more like a moving target. It might be this when you're in the teenage years, but it might be something else when you're in your golden years.
Right, and that's where I know some bisexual individuals, the bisexual community has a saying. It's not just a phase.
Right.
And what that means is, for them, when they were younger, when they told people they were bisexual, it was treated as, well, they're just trying to figure out which gender they're attracted to sexually, and it's a phase, it'll pass, which I've read the research. It happens. Uh-huh. It does. It does happen where you consider yourself bisexual, but over time you can drift one way or another. But that's not always the case. And I think that's a very important thing too, is, you know, it can be a phase, but at the same time, it probably isn't. So yeah, I think that some trans individuals force themselves to change their sexuality.
Yes.
Because they tie it to both their gender identity and social conformity.
We were taught, or
programmed, if you will, that if you're a man, you should be attracted to women, and if you're a woman, you're supposed to be attracted to men. You're not supposed to be attracted to the same gender or anything other than that. Now, that's really changed in recent years because of the acceptance, even though it's been gradual, of same-sex couples. But let's not fool ourselves. It's still there. There's still a bit of that. And I think a lot of trans individuals are going to hurt themselves and only be half as happy as they could be by forcing themselves into that particular box. So again, I don't think they're exclusively tied together. While they do intersect, they don't, just because you identify as one gender does not mean you have to be sexually attracted to, for lack of a better term, the opposite gender, like most people think.
Yeah, like when I first, the first person I told, first friend I told that I was trans, he thought I was gay. And I was like, no, I still like girls. And he's like, but how can you like girls if you think you are a girl? And I was like, have you ever met a lesbian? And he's like, yes. And I was like, then that's, just think I'm a lesbian. And he's like, no, but you have a dick. You can't be a lesbian. I'm like, God damn it, dude.
Well, I mean, you can. Yeah. To me, that's a very tricky slope. And even within the LGBTQ community, we kind of battle back and forth on identities and stuff like that. You know, that's kind of how I see things now. You know, I see myself in a lesbian relationship. Why? Well, that's kind of the definition of two women in a relationship, you know? While I haven't done any gender reassignment surgeries, that's how I see myself. That's how I'm presenting myself. That's the direction I'm going. That's how I feel. So, I mean, that's how I define mine and AJ's relationship. Is to me, it is a lesbian relationship.
Yeah, and there's just, you know, the big thing, the big takeaway is, especially for trans people, I think that if you really want to consider yourself an ally, the big takeaway is, don't put us in a box you wouldn't put your cisgendered friends in. You know, if you have a friend, if you have a girl that's a lesbian and you can accept her, or a guy who's gay, then you can accept a trans man as a heterosexual dude who's into girls and not as a lesbian who cut her thing off or grew a thing, however you want to phrase it. You know what I mean? Like, right. the surgery, and a lot of people, we'll get into that to another day too, because a lot of people, that's the first question people ask me is, when are you going to have the surgery? You know, you don't have to. I'm going to put this out there. You do not have to have the surgery to be trans. That's, you don't have to do anything to be trans. You can just wake up and say, I'm trans. Maybe you're gender fluid, but you can still say you're trans because trans and gender fluid are on the same spectrum. And we'll accept you either way till you get it figured out. But if you want to dress like a girl, I'm going to be like all for it. Go, you go, you. And if you want to be a tomboy and like dudes, be a tomboy and like dudes. Just because you're a tomboy doesn't mean you're a lesbian. And it doesn't mean you're a trans. It just means you like to fit in with guys. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yes, you know? Yes, exactly. And it's kind of interesting that you would mention tomboys liking guys and not being considered the butch lesbians, because that actually ties in really nicely here to our next topic, which is a double standards.
Yes.
That are imposed on segments of the LGBT community. And I want to say this is kind of like because of social conformity. And it has to do with acceptance. So, you know, we did some talking in the last episode, and there's a lot of talk recently about reclaiming of different words in different communities. Last week we discussed the word queer and how it was something that is kind of being reclaimed from a derogatory term. But this is something I think the entire LGBTQ community needs to address. This is a topic that bothers me. And it seems to be more severe based on specific parts of the LGBTQ community that you are. To me, there's some like stark contrasts in the way same-sex couples are in this group. This is the gay and the lesbian communities. Now, I want to pause and say, while this is something that is getting better, we still have a long way to go. So the double standards I'm talking about based on acceptance is for a lot of people, it's really hard to accept any individual group than it is another group. And then you get into these different segments of each of those groups. The biggest one to me that's the most visible is in the same-sex couples community, primarily the lesbian community, okay? It seems like it's easier for people in general to accept a lesbian couple over a gay couple, right? Like, it's more acceptable to be two women in a relationship than two men. Again, this is getting better than it was, but it's still a long way to go. To me, the standard is way more apparent and extremely drastic in the lesbian community itself. Because then you can start breaking down the lesbian couples and how they're accepted. For example, it's easier for a lesbian couple to be accepted by everybody if one of them is the definition of attractive, the social definition. I mean, that's a, you know...
They used to call them lipstick lesbians.
Right, you know, the fit, thin, super feminine. It seems to be easier for people to accept a lesbian couple if one person was like that. It's even easier if they both have that. Definitely like the porn industry, like things.
And you see it a lot in television, because even back in the 90s when everyone was getting all, you know, gaga over Friends, there were a lot of same-sex interactions on that show, but they were all women. They never showed a guy kissing another guy, but they would show all. I mean, eventually they got that. You know, they dabbled in it for comedic effect. But you will see, and this goes all the way back to the 70s. You will see women holding hands, women living together, women being okay, but not men. I mean, you'd see something like, again, for comedic effect, you'd see like The Odd Couple, for example. But they made it very clear these two dudes were just living together. They weren't, you know, they weren't homosexual. Then you have the ambiguity of Bert and Ernie, but we'll get into that in another day.
Yeah, let's not get into that one. That one's a slippery slope. So,
but mean, yeah, there's yeah, that's a big just, thing.
It's easy. It seems like the standard is it's easier to accept because when we take the gay and the lesbian couple communities, you know, they both are same-sex couples. That's their main umbrella they're under. But it does seem like society is more willing to accept two quote-unquote hot women together than two average guys. And I think that's...
And even, that's even within that...
That's got to go.
Even within that, I've noticed that whenever you have two lesbians, people just accept you have two lesbians. But when you have two homosexual men, you have to... People always ask, well, which one's the man, which one's the woman? Why right. does there have to be a man or a woman? Why can't they just both be women or both be men or whatever?
Exactly. Exactly. You know, that's the thing too is, yeah, who's the guy, in the relationship and who's the girl?
Which is a clever way of saying who's the top and who's the bottom, but we don't need to go there.
No, that's another thing later. That's something, a whole different topic that we can get into way later.
Yes.
But yeah, I think that's the deal too, is, you know, people will go, okay, you know, here's the lesbian community. Okay, cool. Two chicks, no problem. You know? But two guys, it's like, you look at that and some people go, well, what, couldn't they not get a girl? Are they that desperate? I mean, you know, things like that. This is also something that, it's definitely applied to the transgender community. Mm-hmm. It does seem way easier, for people in a society, in society as a whole, to accept someone who was born female, but decides to transition to a male, rather than those of us who were born male transitioning to female. I don't know what it is about that. It's just a standard place on us. And the whole attractive stereotype is definitely applied to trans women.
Oh, absolutely.
And we even have to deal with a little caveat to that particular thing.
Yeah, that's something like trans... I know a lot of trans women whose gender dysphoria kicks their ass, so to speak, if they can't pass for a woman. And I always ask them, why can't you just pass for a butch lesbian?
Because that's not how they see themselves.
I know, but I'm saying, like, you know, like, we put that on ourselves, too. But it goes, I mean, I'm not trying to be facetious. I'm just being like, you know, we are hard on ourselves. Like, I've had people tell me I have a very feminine voice. And every time I answer the phone, people always say, ma'am. And this goes my whole life. I've always had, you know, that people always say, well, yes, ma'am. And I was like, even when I was, like, secretly, like, okay with that, I still had to be like, no, actually, I'm a guy. Because, you know, I was still using my other name. And... I don't hear it. I hear my voice and I'm like, I cringe. I'm like, ew, who's that guy pretending to be me? So we put some of that on ourselves too, but I kind of want to double back to the lesbian, or not lesbian, but the trans man thing. And I have a theory about that, if you don't mind.
No, please share.
Okay, so we already know that we live in a very misogynistic, male-dominant culture. And so I'm going to quote a movie called Chasing Amy. And basically it goes back to, I'll quote the movie, kind of set the premise, and then I'll go into my theory. So Chasing Amy is, it's Ben Affleck and some other girl, I don't remember her name. And she's a lesbian, he's straight, and they get into a romantic relationship that turns sexual, and then he comes up with this, he tries to quote unquote straighten her out. One of his friends says, lesbians, in the movie he says, lesbians don't make sense because everybody needs dick in their life. And he says, gay guys make sense because they just need dick. Girls don't make sense. Lesbians, but that was like the premise because he's coming at it from a male dominant perspective. Trans men are okay because from a male perspective where the male thinks that they are superior and our society rewards them for that and treats them as superior, the woman is, she's the trans man is actually trading up in society's eyes. Whereas a trans man, a trans woman who's a male to female, you're betraying your masculinity. And to them, they just see that not only as a betrayal of all men everywhere, but you're trading down. You're being submissive. You're low, which, you know, that goes against the whole concept of feminism and breaking the glass, you know, ceiling in the first place. It's like, we want equality, right? Equality means it shouldn't matter what you got in your pants. We should all be treated the same, period. And so I think a lot of it does come down to, you have people, especially when, like, they'll accept a trans man because if they don't see her as a real man anyways, she's still a woman to them. Whereas a trans woman, that's just a man pretending to be a woman. They don't accept that because either you're giving up on your masculinity or, you know, you're subverting cultural norms. And that makes people uncomfortable because they don't know how to handle that.
I think that pretty much hits it right on the top of the head there, you know. I gotta agree. I really do agree that because, yeah, it is, it's still a male-dominated world. There really isn't any place on the planet where it is the ideal equal 50-50 split, you know.
Even if you look at Britain, they have a queen. They've had a queen my whole lifetime, my mom's whole lifetime, but they still constantly electing male prime ministers. They had, you know, one female prime minister, and then they were like, yep, we did that. Don't want to do that again.
Yeah. I mean, there's, and that's definitely, I think, plays into how trans men are accepted socially more than, trans women. Now, you know, I mentioned that there's for us trans women, there is a caveat to the acceptance, and that is, as a trans woman, whether or not we have had GRS or gender reassignment surgery. Again, it seems easier for some people to accept a trans woman as, you know, that is, as we say it, post-op as opposed to pre-op. By that I mean they've had the gender reassignment surgery as opposed to they haven't had
surgery. And using the old terminology, they would have said pre-op is a transvestite and post-op is a transsexual. Well, fortunately, we've gotten away from that. But
and that's transvestite's another word I really just absolutely loathe.
Same here. I always just shortened it to tranny, which the porn community did too, until we came up with transgender, and I was just like, I'm not comfortable with tranny, but I'll take it over the other word.
I don't like that either. And I think we're gonna get into, I know we will in future topics and future shows, we're gonna get into those words, slang, things like that, that, you know, if you use them, you just need to stop.
Right.
Because it's not so awesome. I do want to real quick, though, touch kind of like what you said, Stephanie, about, you know, the gender dysphoria and you having issues with your voice. So one of the things I'm constantly dealing with is that. And I keep contemplating doing things like vocal retraining to have that softer, more feminine voice, because, you know, I'm definitely one of those, when I hear it, you know, it does not sound right, and I have to stop myself from speaking certain ways, and AJ helps me with that. I remember after our first episode went live, and everybody was asking me what I thought about it, And I said, well, I mean, it was okay. It's her first episode. I didn't really like how I sounded. I've never liked my voice. Most people don't. I said to, I believe it was my sister-in-law or my brother or somebody, that I didn't like it because I sounded like a dude. And of course, their first, no, you do, you don't. You sound fine. And that's okay. AJ came home and I told her that that's how I felt about the episode. She listened to it. She came home. She hugged me and she said, I hate to tell you this, girl, but your first podcast, you sound like a dude. And so that is definitely something we put on ourselves, is to try to fit into that social conformity. So, you know, that's definitely a struggle all trans individuals deal with. Even trans men can struggle with their voice not being deep enough.
Yes. And you know, that goes back to social conformity too, because like men in general want to sound more masculine and women in general want to sound more dainty. You don't have to fit into that, you know? Like, I like to point to a couple of like what we'll say heteronormative examples. You know, for example, Madonna, when she speaks, she has a very masculine voice, but when she sings, she has the prettiest voice I've ever heard, in my opinion. But she does sound very manly at times. Another example is Ellen. Ellen is a very well up until recently, very well respected member of the LGBT community. She's hit a couple of scandals recently, but we won't dig into that. But she definitely looks like the stereotypical butch lesbian for the most part. And she sounds like a guy trying, or a girl trying to be a guy. But then when she softens up, when she gets emotional, she sounds like a woman. But, you know, like, look at Maude. I know we're digging back into the 70s, but Maude was a very raspy, very manly sounding woman. That was okay.
Yeah, Bea Arthur was definitely that way.
But that was okay, because nobody gave a shit. It, you know, it was just literally like, you know, it's only been in the last, I want to say last 10 to 15 years that we really start, ever since we've, okay, now we're accepting gay people, we're accepting trans people to exist. Now we're doubling down on some of the stereotypes, the old norms, for a lot of the same reasons why Mr., you know, asshole just got evicted from the White House, because there were a lot of people that didn't accept we were making progress in racial equality. We elected an African-American president, and then they were like, nope, we got to go back to the way things were, and then we overcorrected. And I think the same thing is happening with the gender, where a lot of people were okay with if you go back and look at the shows from the 90s, people were busting down gender norms and stereotypes all the time, and we were being a lot more inclusive. And then all of a sudden it's like, nope, men are men, women are women, and then, you know, you can be gay if you want, you can be straight if you want, we don't care. But, you know, we really tightened up a lot, I think, in the last few years. And to me, that's kind of sad, because, you know, even trans women, I know myself included, I don't know about you, but I know I had a hard time wanting to come out because I was scared of how am I going to present. Like the other day, like 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, I wanted to go outside, and I had a pair of really comfortable jeans that are women's jeans. These are women's cut jeans I bought in the women's department. And I have a t-shirt that's very gender neutral. It's just, it's literally just, it says Nintendo, and it's got a picture of the controller. That's it. The NES controller. And I was like, I don't want to wear that though, because that's too masculine for me. But I was like, women can wear jeans. Women can wear t-shirts. And I still struggle with that because I overcorrect. Sometimes I go so far in the other direction. It's like, I just want, because I do struggle with gender dysphoria. And it's like, I just go all, and so we do it to ourselves too, but we don't do it to ourselves because that's how we feel. We do it to ourselves because that's how society makes us feel. And that is what sucks about it. If society was more okay, you wouldn't have people hiding in the closet. And I'm hoping 20, 30 years from now, or maybe even sooner, you won't have to have coming out of the closet stories. That won't be a thing anymore. It'll be a thing of the past, because everyone will just be like, you know, second grader will come into school and be like, hey, I'm a trans girl now. Okay, cool. No one will give a shit. Versus, oh my God, I had to wait until I had to tell this friend and that friend and that friend before I was finally comfortable enough to tell people. Because there's so much pressure on us. And that's not
there
just
is.
Us. That's women.
There really is.
That's all
you're
women.
Good,
all men.
Right.
There's, I mean, like men, like I, one of the things that I said in the first episode is it's been so liberating that I can sit and watch a sitcom and I can just cry and no one's going to judge me. But I couldn't do that when I was still, you know, perceived as a man because men aren't supposed to cry. Unless,
right.
Unless it's like, I mean, you can cry at your grandmother's funeral. You can cry when your wife dies. And then if one of your kids die, you just go hunting for the weekend.
Well, I don't know if it's that way, but, you know. Jeez.
I'm kind of a bitch.
Wow. That's okay. A lot of layers there again, Stephanie. So I guess the question becomes, how do we as a community change this double standard? How do we change it? I mean, it's not like we can't exactly reclaim anything like we can with the word queer. It's that view of acceptance put on us by those outside the community. And honestly, I think the only thing we can do is bring attention to this, and not in a preachy or combative way, but I think it's just acknowledging that this that it exists, but I do think we have a long ways to go to making the double standard just disappear.
And I think one of the things we need really, and it's not, we don't need leadership from the government top down. What we need is we need acceptance from our own communities. It doesn't start with the state of Texas or North Carolina or California. It starts with you live in Midland or Commerce or Salina or where. It starts there at the local level. It starts at you as a member of the LGBT community going to, you know, voting locally, but also going to city council, being involved in your community. Not necessarily, I mean, in any way that you're comfortable with, but it also like, hey, if you have kids in school, go to the school board meetings and make your voice heard. Or be involved in like a church group or in a community outreach, like a ministerial alliance or a Rotary Club or something that transcends this, you know, politics. And then just, you know, be around people. Just by us being visible, us communicating, people will see that, oh yeah, you know what? You're not the pedophile that I thought you were. You're not the pervert that I thought you were. You're not the, you know, like all these stereotypical things people think of, whatever it is
you're
they
not,
think we are.
You're
they,
not the freak.
Yeah.
That you thought. That
yeah,
thought
and when people, that's the best way. If you're trans, if you're gay, if you're straight, whatever you are, if you're LGBT in any way, shape, or form, the best way for us to enact change is not at the policy level. Yes, be politically active to your heart's desire and your own ability, but be visible in the community, because you will make people uncomfortable, but that's changing. Our attitudes are changing. And they won't change if people don't see it. Nobody was talking about LGBT anything until Ellen came out on TV and said, I'm a lesbian. And then people were talking about it. And then the next person came out. And the next person came out. Before that, it was just a joke that people made fun of. It was something that people referenced. Or it was something that the government said, oh, you know, that's that's all those people out there that are dying of AIDS we don't care about. You know.
Right. So basically, I mean, yeah, you're right. It's we've got to be visible, and we've got to work towards. I don't know about the, you know, the being any sort of politically active on it, but we do need to just be out there. We need people, just like anything else. You know, when you come out to family and friends, they need time to wrap their mind around it.
Yeah, and I was saying, like,
if you do it at our age,
and you don't have to be,
gotta have time to process.
Yeah, and you don't have to be involved politically, but what I was saying is just, like, you don't have to speak up, but maybe once in a while, go to a city council meeting and just let your city government see you so that they remember they represent people like you.
Right, and just be visible, and eventually, you know, that it's going to take time. Are you going to get stared at? Yeah, I do, all the time.
Yeah.
All the time.
I'm
then you got to figure out how to not let that bother you. But that's a topic that, you know, we can definitely dive into a lot more further down the road.
Yeah. But always, unfortunately, we have to put this out there too. Be safe. Put yourself in situations where you know you'll be safe. Don't go above and beyond.
Because... Oh, always. You know, it's like, you know, quote a lot of movies here. Like they say in the Bourne Identity, never walk into a room you don't know how to walk out of.
Right.
You know, never do that because, yeah, that's primary is we have to be safe as a community. So, but I think this double standard, getting it out there, talking about it, I think that will slowly change. Hopefully, like Stephanie said, 20-30 years from now, maybe sooner, coming out stories are not a thing. But in the meantime, I do believe we need to be bringing attention to this and making sure that it's not, it's on its way out and it is outdated and everybody understands that. So, okay.
We still got some time if you want to talk about.
Let me lighten things up a little bit, Steph.
Yes.
So let's talk about something that really kind of goes a little more specific to us trans women.
Yes.
And that's makeup, and we'll get into a little bit about some of our discoveries and things. I think makeup itself for trans women is one of the easiest, and it's probably the most frequent first step for a lot of trans women. It's easier to purchase than clothing. It's easily removed if you're not out as transgender. And I know for me, it's a very exciting step because there are so many options.
And this is where I'm gonna get a little girly. I love sitting in front of a mirror and playing with my makeup. I really do. I
agree.
I love experimenting and playing and watching YouTube videos and just be like, oh, that's cute, I want to try that. Now I'm a novice, maybe beginner level, but I'm getting better, you know. But yeah, I remember the first time I went shopping for makeup, I had to lie and say I was shopping for my girlfriend, and it was like, yeah, I just need to get something for my girlfriend, but I want to get her. I don't want to get her jewelry because, you know, we're not there yet. And they were like, okay, well, what is her complexion? And I was like, well, she's, and I was trying to describe her, but I was trying to describe her without making it obvious I was describing myself. And then they were like, okay, well, you'd probably want this and this. And they gave me like a couple of things, and I bought those things, went home, and I had a female coworker who had someone I had told I was trans and I was discovering makeup. Told her what I bought, and she was like, oh no, that was all the wrong stuff.
right, yeah.
And yeah, pictures.
What I did was, my makeup journey was, I just bought stuff online. That's
I never
cool
thought
thing
of
about
that.
It, is you can buy, unlike buying clothes.
Yes.
You know, makeup, if it's the wrong shade, you're out. At most, maybe, if you get the inexpensive stuff, you know, at most $6, and you can just, you know, put it away and nobody will ever see it. Clothing, if it doesn't fit because you bought it online, well, now you're getting into returns and all that, and that's just a pain in the ass. You know, there is a lot of options, and
well, you just buy a sewing machine. That's all.
Yeah, and for me, you know, I agree, Stephanie. I enjoy it, too. I mean, I can get up. I don't usually put mine on first thing in the morning. But when I look in the mirror and I do go and put mine on, I always seem to find myself saying the same thing when I'm done. And it's just me looking in the mirror and going, hey, there you are. Because I look in the mirror at the first, and you're like, that's the same guy that I've always seen in the mirror. Ugh.
Even like...
that on, it definitely makes you feel a lot more feminine and girly.
Yes. Like, I was going to say, for me, like, there's... We live in a, and I try not to say its name because we know what it is, but the thing that's fucked up the world in the last several months. Everybody's wearing, not everybody, but most people are out wearing masks. And so
yeah.
I'm going to go out. If I'm going to the grocery store, I do not want to get sick. So I'm going to wear my mask for me. I don't give a shit what anyone else thinks. And if you interpret it your way, I don't care. I don't want to get sick. And if I have the virus, I don't want to spread it to other people because that's irresponsible in my opinion. But, I just don't want to take that on my conscience, you know? So everywhere I go, I wear my, even though I know my face is going to be covered, I'm going to have my hair covering my ears and my forehead and my glasses on, you're not going to see any of it, I'm still going to put my makeup on before I go to the grocery store. Because it's for me. It's not for you.
Right. You know? Now, I will say, you know, while I said it's probably one of the easiest and frequent steps, it's also probably one of the most difficult things to master.
Yes.
I know AJ used to make fun of me all the time because I would watch these long YouTube tutorials and you put your eyeshadow on here and then you do the shadow part, a darkening on the crease, and then you have to do this highlight. And she used to look at me and say, I really can't wait for the day when you stop doing your makeup like you're going to the club. But I know even a lot of CIS women have a hard time with doing certain techniques and certain things. So I know that there's a lot of, it's not just trans women that have a hard time mastering these things. But I know I have a lot of fun when I try different things. It definitely is, like I said, makes me feel the most feminine thing. And I think it's the most feminine thing that a trans woman can do to help herself feel like her true self. There's just something about it that helps you suddenly see a whole different version of yourself that starts to match how you feel on the inside.
And it could be anything. You don't have to do everything. You could just put a little lip gloss on and, you know, straighten your eyebrows and you're good to go. You don't have to, I mean, it depends on what kind of mood you're in as well, but sometimes I like, if I'm going to a job interview or if I'm even going to work, I'm going to sit down, and I really understand the whole stereotype of why women take forever to get ready to go. I need if I'm going to leave the house, I need an hour to do my makeup. It takes me that long because I want to sit down. I'm meticulous. I want to be like, okay, I got to do. I do three layers on my face. I'm not going to get into the specifics, but you know, I do three layers on my face and then I touch up. You know, eyeshadow, eyebrows, lipstick, and then you know whatnot. But sometimes I go even, if I'm going to, like when I went to the drag show, you know, I stepped it up a little bit. Darker eyeshadow, some eyeliner, heavier mascara. I tried fake lashes. I can't do fake lashes. I need someone to show me how to do it.
Fake lashes.
I can't watch a YouTube video and do it. I have to have somebody actually do it on themselves so I can see how they do it and help me, like, actually do it myself. And then I can probably figure it out. Otherwise, I'm just going to stay away from fake lashes for now, but I did get an eyelash curler. That helped a little bit.
Yeah, but an eyelash curler, you really got to have some eyelashes to curl.
Yeah.
You know, something I noticed this talking about the eyelash curler was before I was actually on hormones, there wasn't enough there to curl. But since I've been on the hormones, those have grown, and now there's enough to curl. So yeah, I mean, I'm in the same boat, you know. I mean, most of the time, I do as most people who know me, I tell them I just put my eyes on, and all that is usually eyeshadow, eyeliner, and mascara, and those three. That's usually enough. You know, if I'm not going out, if I am going out, depends on where I'm going, I can usually hide other things I don't like about my face with the masks. that we're all supposed to be wearing. But yeah, I mean, I at least do that, you know, so it doesn't matter if I'm going to a store or if I'm just going to go visit my brother, my nieces and nephews, then I probably just have my eyes on those three little things. Now, if AJ and I are going to go out on a date night, oh, hell no, that ain't enough. I'm going to do everything I can. I'm going to go concealers, foundations, finishing powder, every little step. And yeah, it takes a long time. So, you know, as you transition, you kind of understand, yeah, you know, this whole joke and stereotype of women take a lot longer, you know, yeah, it's a real thing. You know. But makeup, it's also kind of a slippery slope, too, because you can actually, even buying the less expensive brands, it can add up fast. You can go through so much trying to find the right products to hide or cover masculine features while bringing out the more feminine ones. And I know I have several, and I mean several bottles of foundations and concealers I got, and I weren't happy with. They didn't do what I needed them to do. And all they do is sit there in my medicine cabinet collecting dust. So, I mean, it is a slippery slope. You can get into a pretty deep dive.
Yeah, when I was first starting out, I was bad about... First of all, I made the mistake of buying the dollar store crap, and I just bought the cheapest stuff, and I was just like, all right. I didn't even pay any attention to what I was buying. I just put it on my face, and then threw on some... And this is before I was going out in public, but I was just like, okay. I'd look in the mirror, and I'd be like, ugh, that looks worse. And there were, like, the first few months when I was still just playing around in my apartment, in my bathroom by myself with the lights off and no one around, all the doors closed, curtains pulled, I would spend 2 or 3 hours just playing with makeup. That didn't work. Wash it off. Do it again. That cost money to do that.
Yeah, it does. So, I mean, that's the thing.
I quit it.
That's the thing is you got to be careful. You know, it can... Like we talked about with finding your style, it can add up. So something, you know, kind of a side note here. Something, Stephanie, I realized, I guess earlier this past week, being transgender is expensive.
Yes. Well, being a woman's expensive anyways.
Well, I mean, but just think about it. Transitioning stuff, too.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I mean, it's expensive. But, But that's pretty much makeup. I mean, there are still a lot of things I want to learn. I'd love to learn to be able to do the smoky eyes. You know. But that's just me. I kind of like those kind of looks like that. But it takes time. If you are a trans woman and you're listening and we're talking about the makeup and stuff, and you just constantly get unhappy with it and you're having a hard time, girl, don't worry, it gets easier. You learn little tips and tricks, and even you don't even always learn these off YouTube, but you just figure these out. Hey, here's how to do it kind of quick, here's a better way to do it.
And when you're comfortable, there are some department stores that you can go to and they have women who are trained specifically to help trans women find their makeup look.
Yeah, and there's even a couple of salons now here in our part of the world, Stephanie, that they cater to transgender individuals now, and they will help you do the, you know, your hair, your makeup, the whole nine yards. It just depends on what you're after. I'm not gonna plug any of those places here on this episode. That'll definitely be on a later episode that we'll probably mention a little more in detail on things like that. So All right. Well, let's move in to our weekly top five.
Yes.
You ready for this one?
No, but I'm here. You get to start this one off this week because this is my revenge for, or your revenge on me for picking you a topic you didn't want to do last week. So I'm doing one, you making me do one I didn't want to do. So here we are.
I told you when we had our production meeting from episode 2 that I was going to get out of control. I don't know that we're ready for me to do all that with that. And you said, oh, it will be fine, girl. You do all right.
Well, we're all right. I think it was entertaining. It was informative.
I thought it was a train wreck.
Oh,
wow. Oh, wait, no. I mean, I thought I was a train wreck.
Oh, okay.
All right, so this week's top five is music genres, and it's not really like what speaks to us the most or anything. This is just like the genres that dominate our playlist. You know, if somebody walked up to you or they came over to your home and you're playing your music, this is more than likely what they're going to hear.
Yes.
I will say my personal music tastes, anybody who has actually ridden with me in a car, that I have one of my my homemade CDs playing, will look at me and go, what in the hell is wrong with you? I mean, I'm all over the place when it comes to individual songs. But this is more 90% of the time, this is your, I guess the best way to put it, fallback music. And it's just the top five genres, not necessarily artists, but yeah, genres as a whole. So, Stephanie, why don't you start us off with your number five?
Yeah, disclaimer real quick before I get going too deep into this. I used to be a professional DJ, and I mean that by, I used to DJ weddings, I used to DJ at a club, I used to DJ for people, and I had my own recording studio. So music is very much, very personal to me. And I love all kinds of music, but there's specific kinds of music that I listen to more than anything else. This is sort of broad. My number five is very broad, but it's also not as broad as it could be. And it's 90s alternative, but it does not include grunge rock or 90s punk rock. So when I say 90s alternative, I mean like the weird stuff that doesn't fall under any other umbrella. Like, for example, Garbage or Beck or B-52s. Not necessarily, you know, the Red Hot Chili Peppers or Nirvana or that, you know, like grunge, you know, punk rock kind of thing. This could include things like the Mighty Mighty Bosstones. I love ska. I have a lot of ska in my playlists. And I listen to more ska than I realized. Not in terms of volume, but in terms of just, you know, like amount. In other words, I don't listen to a lot of ska bands, but the ska I listen to it a lot. But that's not a popular genre. A lot of people don't like ska music, and a lot of people are like, what the fuck is she saying? Is that a word? And so,
yes, it is a word. Stephanie has not lost her mind yet.
But I love the 90s, like specifically, like, I don't know what's the exact classification, but like just a few examples. I love Beck. I love Cake. I love the President's of the United States. I love even weirder stuff than that, you know, like Butthole Surfers. We don't need to dig into any deeper than that, but I like a band called the Butthole Surfers. They got a really awesome song called Pepper, which is, just by the name, you're scratching your head. I love Veruca Salt, Seether. I listen to that song probably 3 times a week, if not more. So there's a lot of 90s alternative. Now, grunge is a separate... I classify grunge as its own thing. And to me, grunge, which is what we classify, that's Alice in Chains, that's Red Hot Chili Peppers, that's Nirvana, and any of that filth. I stay out of that stuff as much as possible.
I have to admit, I do like a little grunge here and there. You know, some Nirvana, some old school stuff. So, cool. My number five, what normally, this probably isn't a big surprise to most people, but it's usually comedy music. I love parody stuff. I love things that have fun. I mean, I guess you can figure out who the top artist in that genre is. That's the...
Well, it's not Da Youpers, so I'm going to say probably Weird Al.
It's definitely Weird Al. And I will totally admit, I prefer, when it comes to him, his original things, not his, over his parodies. Not that some of his parodies aren't hilarious and they have good energy, but some of his songs that he's just written about a strange subject, like one of my favorites of his right now is a song called CNR. And CNR is a song about Charles Nelson Reilly. And if you don't know who that is, you can Google him and look him up. But he was pretty big, a pretty big guest star on a lot of 70s game shows.
Okay.
And there was a period in my life when that's all I watched, which was, I don't want to get into that. Those are dark times. That song, you know, to me, I like it better than Amish Paradise or, I'm trying to think of something else that everybody could have heard. But I like it better than his parodies. But I also do like some other stuff occasionally. I like Rodney Carrington does some funny songs. There was one I thought used to be pretty funny, but now that I have matured and come out as transgender, it's not as funny as I thought it was. But I like comedy, and I like music that makes me feel pretty good. So what's on your number four, Steph?
Okay, number four is not gonna be too far from number one or number five. It's 90s pop rock, but this is not necessarily... Okay, pop rock to me refers to a specific class of music. I'm talking Bryan Adams, U2, Collective Soul. This is more of the soft rock, but not like soft rock. I know that's hard. I know that's kind of like, dude, chill. But it's like, no, I'm talking like the stuff that's basically what you're going to hear on the radio, but not necessarily the alternative stuff. But it does include your boy bands, it does include your Spice Girls, it includes your Britney Spears, things like that. Basically your 90s pop slash rock, or your top 40, if you will, but not necessarily the top 40, because there's a lot of stuff in the top 40 I didn't give a shit about. Especially when it comes to, like, you know, individual artists. There's a lot of individual artists, like Whitney Houston, for example, not throwing, you know, her under the bus or whatever, but she did nothing for me. So, you know, there's a lot of individual singers like that. But I love a lot of that kind of stuff, that 90s. I'm a 90s girl, so for me, a lot of it's just that pop slash rock. But it's also things like EMF, Unbelievable. You know, that could fall under my first category, or it could fall under this one. It's not quite grunge, but it's in the ballpark. But it's definitely pop. That's my big... You could just say 90s, like, quote-unquote radio rock, too, if you want. And, you know, I do listen to a lot of Marilyn Manson, but he doesn't really fall under any category, so I just want to throw that out there as well.
Okay, you know what? First off, what are you talking bad about my girl Whitney?
Sorry.
Really? First it was Die Hard.
No, it's Mariah Carey for me, and she's my goddess.
Okay, well, let's agree to disagree on that. All right, I tell you what, you can dislike Whitney, I'll dislike Mariah.
Okay.
So for me, here's the funny thing. On number four, we're kind of on the same page there. For me, it is 90s pop, but it's not just 90s pop. 90s and 2K pop, and I mean
ooh,
early 2000s
ooh,
kind of pop.
Ooh, you just like punched me in the gut. Ooh, that's a... ugh, yuck. The world ended in 2000 for me. There's no music after 2001 that I give a shit about. I'm sorry.
I do have modern music I like. I do have some modern bands I do like. But, I, you know, usually, I mean, hell, number four on my preset is is on a Sirius XM is, I believe it's 90s on 9, and number 5 is Pop 2K.
Okay.
You know? So, yeah, those are definitely genres that I usually listen to a lot, just because a lot of it did have a lot of energy. It did have a lot of energy. Some of it was dumb as hell.
Yeah.
But it had a lot of energy. And I think that's what gravitates me towards it. So yeah, it's very much 90s pop. Basically, like Stephanie said, top 40 kind of stuff. So what's on your number 3?
This is gonna, maybe this will set you back, or I don't know. But my number 3, and this is actually like, this is where we're getting into number 3, number 2, and number 1 are almost indistinguishable in some regards. Very specifically, I'm talking West Coast G-Funk. I listen to all, and I'm talking 90s, but also a little 80s, a little, we can get into 2003-ish. By the time we get to 2003, we're on the downward slope. But I'm talking Snoop Doggy Dogg before he was just Snoop Dogg. I'm talking about Dr. Dre when he was still with Death Row Records. I'm talking about, you know, Coolio. He's on the lighter side, but he's okay. I'm talking Warren G, The Dog Pound, Lady of Rage, RBX, Ice Cube, he's kind of, he went a little too Hollywood too quick for me, but, you know, he's still got some stuff out there. WC, West Side Connection, Mac 10, all these bands that you're sitting there, like, Googling, are any of these fucking real people? I'll be honest,
I've heard of 3 of them.
I live and die, I breathe G-Funk. G-Funk referring to gangster rap, but not gangster rap in the broader sense. Very specifically, West Coast gangster rap. Which is it's very different from all other forms of gangster rap. And if you're not into gangster rap, you're just like, isn't it all the same? It's just a bunch of dudes rapping about drugs and bitches and blunts. And it's like, yeah, but it's the way they do it. But it's all about the 90s. We classify it G-Funk. Some top 40 examples to kind of give people an idea what G-Funk is. Obviously, Snoop Doggy Dogg, I already mentioned. What's My Name? What's his other big ones from that period? Lottie Dottie, that's a big one from that period. Murder Was the Case. Those are the ones that people remember from that period. Gin and Juice is another big one. Dr. Dre, it's like, you know, his songs like Let Me Ride or Nothing But a G-Thang. From Warren G, it would be Regulate. That's a big song a lot of people know. Coolio, we're talking Fantastic Voyage. Not so much 1-2-3-4 or his big, big, big one, Gangsta's Paradise, which you mentioned, Amish Paradise, which spoofs it. But yeah, there's a lot of that stuff. WC is an artist. I don't remember exactly what it stands for, but he's a member of a band called West Side Connection with Mac 10 and Ice Cube. I really like them, that sound, and The Dog Pound. That's my biggest, like, I love The Dog Pound, and a lot of people don't even know who they are. And I can't tell you their names, because one of them has the N-word in his name. And so I'll just tell you can Google The Dog Pound.
Yeah. Well, all right. So, yeah, that's an interesting number 3. I'm gonna say that's definitely not something I normally would listen to. My number 3 is going to be, are you ready? Because this is going to be like polar opposite of you. And this one kind of goes against what everything else in this list does. It's not exactly high energy. But then again, I have moods where I don't want that high energy. But I still want to feel good. I don't want to bring myself down. I will say AJ hates this genre. She just does not like it at all. Anytime I play any sort of song from this, from these genres, AJ looks at me and just goes, damn, you like some cheesy ass music. You know what? I don't care. I do. So my number 3s are usually love songs and ballads.
Okay.
Such a chick thing, right?
And you don't like Mariah Carey, who's the queen of ballads? God damn it.
No. You know what? That's like getting into the question, why don't I like Axl Rose?
Ugh. Well, I can tell you why you shouldn't like him.
We're not going to get into that because some people are going to say some things and some feelings are going to get hurt. So, but yes, you know, those are kind of things that I definitely will listen to. And when I say stuff like that, that's groups that ranges from 70s, 80s, okay. 90s, today, even going back some of the 50s and 60s stuff. So yeah, that's where my number three is. What's your number two, Stephanie?
So this is tricky because I call it dance pop, but I'm specifically referring to 80s dance pop. Some people will use the word new wave, but new wave actually refers to 80s punk rock or new punk. And I know we're getting into the weeds a little bit, so I'll give you some examples. This is the stuff that if you go to a work party, if you go to a Christmas, not Christmas party, but if you're going to like a company picnic or you're going to a barbecue somewhere, this is the 80s shit everybody's listening to. I'm talking like, you know, Mickey, Devo, Whip It. I'm talking, you know, Duran Duran, Debbie Gibson, that just like the fluffy bubblegum pop from the 80s. But this a lot of the stuff with the synth and an upbeat, anything with an upbeat bubblegum message or a good, you know, dance tempo, anything you can dance to, anything you can just kind of groove to. This is my number one, not number one, but this is what I listen to a lot. And my actual favorite song of all time, my number one favorite song of all time, which I listen to way, way too much, is actually in this category. It's Exposé, Point of No Return, which is actually more of a quote-unquote freestyle dance song, but you know, now we're really getting into the weeds of genres, and I'm not going to try to define what freestyle is, because it's not what people think. When they hear the word freestyle, they think Will Smith, Eminem, freestyling on the mic, and that's not it.
No, that's definitely different. Well, okay, I feel you on that. I have a lot of agreement on a lot of that, but you'll find that out here in a minute with after my number two. My number two dominates my playlist, and a lot of this is mostly like my workout kind of music, my exercising kind of music, and it's a hard rock. And ooh. I'm talking bands like Shinedown, Evanescence, even Disturbed.
Ooh.
Disturbed is something that goes, there's a long story about it.
Okay.
But I'm not going to get into that here. But I like that hard rock. And what's kind of funny is Shinedown's number one on my list for like hard rock. And that is honestly the only band that AJ and I agree on. I mean, hell, we drove to Missouri to see them in concert. So
I don't know who they are.
We totally agree on. So yeah, hard rock. That's what normally dominates mine. But of course, you know, like I said, it's mostly for me to work out to.
Yeah.
And it's got a lot of energy, and I push through. And there are a few people listening that are going to understand where two of those bands, Disturbed and Evanescence, kind of play into my mindset. But we won't get into that on here. So, all right, time for the big ones. You're number one.
Okay, first of all, don't hate me, but that band you just said, I don't even know who they are. So I can't, I'm like, you're like, they're this kind of music. I'm like, I'm going to take your word for it. I've heard of Disturbed, but I don't know what they do. And I just know them from like a poster. And I heard one song by Evanescence, and I don't know how to classify that. So I'm just like, okay, you got it.
It's a hard rock. Trust me, I've got the albums.
Okay.
It's a hard rock.
My number one, and this is, okay, I really want to be very, because like I said, I was a DJ. I'm using terms that are going to make other DJs and music snobs cringe. But my number one is very specifically, but it's also kind of broad, as all of these have been. Techno, dance, club music, but not house, EDM, electronica, or that fucking dubstep garbage the kids are into these days. Specifically, I'm talking about 80s, 90s techno, but not what people put the word techno on when they classify. I'm talking, yeah, Two Unlimited is in the ballpark. I'm talking like the Immortals. I'm talking about like maybe some, you know, maybe the Chemical Brothers a little bit, or Crystal Method a little bit. But I'm also talking the classic stuff like Cybertron, or, you know, a little bit of that, where there's some overlap with hip hop, like, you know, Technotronic, or even, like I said, Too Unlimited. They've got some good techno-y stuff, but I also include dance, like, just in broadly speaking, that, like, electronic dance music, but not EDM, which I know we're getting into the weeds. So this is the stuff, like, you're used to from the 90s. This would be, like, your Real McCoy, Ace of Base, maybe, like, Aqua, not Barbie Girl, but some of their other songs. Eiffel 65 and their Blue and anything from that album. Everything from that album, to be honest. Not so much Daft Punk, and I really hate telling people that, because Daft Punk is more in the house side of things, and I'm not a fan of house. So once you get into house music, I'm just like, okay, now we're getting into the weeds, and I don't care. Blah, blah, blah. But I'm talking, yeah, anything. Basically, if you buy a Jock Jams CD, that's pretty much what I listen to. And I have all 8 of the Jock Jams CDs, and I listen to every single one of them. That's my jam. That's my music. I can't get enough of. And it's everything. And I also put down club music, because a lot of people know it as just 90s club music, but not the quote-unquote rave music. And I know there's a lot of people that are like, you just used a bunch of words. I don't know what any of them mean.
That's why we have the magic of Google.
Yes. But I will say, absolutely my favorite album of all time is Ace of Base, The Sign. I listen to that literally once a week. Start to finish, once a week I listen to it. And if you follow me on Facebook, you know that I listen to that a lot, because I'm always like popping songs from The Sign on there. Now, I have every album by Ace of Base, so I just love them. And a lot of people classify them more as like pop, and they are, but they're Europop, and Europop is kind of a funky word.
Okay, I will say Ace of Base has got catchy tunes that stick in your head. But I have a whole, again, another opinion on that one anyway. Moving on. My number one kind of actually fits a little bit, but it's a little broader. With your number two, it's 80s. 80s music, 80s, 80s pop, 80s rock. Little bit of the hair bands. I know that's AJ's favorites, the hair bands.
The only
all
way,
kinds of stuff.
The only time I want to hear a hair band is when I'm watching Freddy Krueger or Jason.
I can listen to a couple, and then it's like, okay, move on. Somebody, quick, somebody tag in Whitney. Somebody tag in the B-52s. Somebody
yes!
Do something.
Oh my God, I love the B-52s. Thank you for mentioning them.
Yes.
One of my top bands of all time.
But yeah, that's what I mean, I love the 80s stuff. I grew up during that time.
Yeah.
You know, the 80s and the 90s and when I grew up. So that music definitely is big to me. And normally, I mean, around the house, if anybody ever came by and, you know, just to stop by for a visit during the week, when you walked in, you'll probably see I have the big 80s on 8 by SiriusXM playing in the house. You know, I enjoy listening to the VJ top 40s of what was popular in this week in 1984. You know?
Yes.
And normally, most of the time, I'm tone deaf. I can't sing. Okay. I couldn't carry a tune if it had handles and a crew to do it for me. Okay. But that don't mean I'm not going to try. And I do. And I sing around the house, and it's always 80s. It's always 80s, and it irritates pretty much anybody around me, including AJ and my cats and the dog, who all really wish I would suddenly go deaf and never speak again.
And what Robin forgot to mention is music peaked in the 80s. Like the 70s where we were on the upward. The 80s is when it peaked. The 90s we were on the downward. And once you get to 2003, music is just like, okay, we're done.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I totally agree that, you know, for me, there are some, I think, some good bands and some good songs.
Oh, yeah.
That are in the modern era. For me, Imagine Dragons, Shinedown, I think, are good modern groups. But I agree. I don't think they make music the same way that they used to. In the 80s, was definitely an age of creativity, for certain. I'm not sure how much of that creativity wasn't fueled by cocaine.
Hey, you know, we don't peek behind the curtain.
Yeah. So, but you know what? Sometimes you get great hits. Sometimes you get big top 40s. Sometimes you get Rock Lobster.
Hey, now.
I'm not saying anything bad about Rock Lobster. That is my all-time favorite song.
Okay.
I love Rock Lobster. But let's face it.
It's catchy.
It's weird as hell.
That's good. I love that.
So, but yeah, that's my number one is just general 80s, and we're talking everything. Brian Adams, yes. Some Madonna.
Oh, Whitney. God, I love Madonna. Yes. Yes.
Warrant, you know, say I'm all over the place.
Yeah, lots of good stuff back there.
Yeah. So, that's this week's top five.
Yeah, and before we wrap up, because I think Robin's got some stuff she wants to wrap things up before we head out. But I do want to clarify, because I don't want to get called a boomer. It's not that music after 2001 doesn't have its merit. It's just, it is an actual fact that post 9/11, our society took a dark turn, and our music reflects that. There's a lot of angst in there. There's a lot of, we won't go into it too deep, but You can hear it, even in the pop music. I mean, you can hear that you have a different worldview than we had. In the 80s, it was just all like bubblegum and, you know, soda pop and let's have fun. Maybe there was a lot of cocaine, who knows. And now it's like, oh God, when are the terrorists going to get us? Well, let's just try to fucking think about something else. All right, take it away.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree. So I guess all we got left is closing.
Yes.
Ready?
Yes.
Okay, so in keeping with our tradition of the closing and how we had our first one, our opening today, we really hope you enjoyed our little podcast today. And we'd hope that you'll take a moment and like our Facebook page at Transposed Pod. Until next time, my friend, happy listening and God bless you.
You didn't reference the trees.
What? There's no... Oh, yeah, the happy little trees.
You can't spoof Bob Ross without talking about happy trees.
No, we have to talk about the happy little trees. The happy little trees. There's no accidents. There's no mistakes. Only happy little accidents. Unless
there you
ask my parents. I definitely was not a happy little accident.
Alrighty.
Take
so,
care, everybody. We'll see y'all in the next episode.
Yes, and next week we're going to be talking about specifically being misgendered, or what misgendering means for a trans individual.
That's going to be deep.
Yes. And I think we all have our stories. So definitely do that. Don't forget to check out... we don't have an Instagram yet, do we? No.
Not yet.
No, just the website. But yeah, don't forget to find us on the interwebs. We're out there. You can find us. Stay cool, y'all.